Okay, it'll be your turn now this hour. We'll open up the phone lines. Our guest is Michael Tellinger. He is live in South Africa, and we're talking about his book, Slave Species of God, Similar Theory with Zechariah Sitchin on how human beings were genetically made, altered. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Michael, of the 12 religions that you looked at, are there similarities here that would match the Sumerian tablet stories?
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, I found that at the point of origin of all these major religions, there was heavy interaction and involvement of mythological gods. And we've now established that the so-called mythological gods were actually real beings and deities that were part of the Anunnaki who came to Earth in search of gold, who created the slave species. And, I'm of the opinion that when the human race became a problem, they started planning some sort of an interventive plan of action. And they started to introduce concepts of divide and rule, and divide and conquer, by which they could control the slave species. And religion, or form of religion, was a perfect tool to do that with.
Was the flood a mechanism to wipe us out, or was it some kind of, catalyst, earth changes, calamity from above?
It is historically documented now, and most scientists agree that around 13,000 years ago, there was a giant flood that swept the earth shortly after the last ice age ended. And the Sumerian tablets also tell us that coincided with the last orbit of the planet Nibiru, on which the Anunnaki dwell. And that particular time, the planet came very close to Earth, not only to Earth, but also to Mars, and causing great seismic and geophysical effects that the Earth hasn't experienced before. And it just so happens that the Earth was quite vulnerable because the ice age has just ended. And the Sumerian tablets describe in great detail how the polar caps of the South Pole cracked and slid into the ocean, causing waves possibly several hundred meters high, sweeping the planet. And we know from just a while ago how a small tsunami could cause such sheer devastation around the world. Now you can, and that was just a few meters high. Imagine a 200 or 300 or 400 meter high wave sweeping right across the world from the South Pole northwards. I mean, it would absolutely destroy everything. So the Sumerian tablets tell us about this, and they also tell us that the Anunnaki knew about this impending problem, and they wanted to use this to wipe out their mistaken experiment or slave species of the Homo sapiens, because it was becoming a problem to them. They actually didn't want to deal with this problem anymore. This is what my understanding tells me.
And,
go ahead.
Would you like to see Nibiru come by in your lifetime?
I would love to. Hopefully that would put an end to all the speculation and so forth. We were talking about that earlier, before one of the earlier breaks, and you asked whether, do I believe that Nibiru exists and its 3,600-year orbit and so forth. Of course I believe that. The Sumerian tablets tell us that in great detail, in not only in Zechariah Sitchin's transcriptions, but in various other translations as well. And we need to start looking at this seriously. Our memory span can hardly last 100 years or 200 years. We wonder what happened 200 years ago when they started discovering the last three planets in our solar system. 500 years, people are still burned at the stake for making ridiculous remarks that the world was not the center of the universe. We're a barbaric species. We're sort of entering our teenagehood of a species. We're behaving irrationally. And I would love to see a planet like this come by. I would love to see that put an end to all the speculations. And if there are any cynics out there saying, well, how could it possibly be that there's a planet on this weird elliptical orbit around the sun? My answer to that is, well, we know that there are comets around on elliptical orbits around the sun, and many of them, many thousands of them. And some of them range from a few years to several years to several hundred years to several thousand years in their orbits. Now, if we believe and understand that comets can have those weird orbits, why not some planets?
All right, let's go to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, George. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
This is Ron. I'm calling just south of Chicago. I'm a trucker. I have a question for Michael. I believe in God with the big G as the almighty being, the almighty creator, and I also believe what you're saying about being created from beings. Do you have any thoughts on whereabouts Jesus Christ would come into the picture, and if he is an Anunnaki or if he is actually the son of God with a capital G?
Oh, interesting question, Michael.
Thanks, Rod. I knew this was going to come up sooner or later. And it's a fascinating question. And I love this. I mean, I could spend 3 hours talking about this alone. Jesus Christ is obviously a very important figure in all our lives, in the global history, because from him came, you know, other religions and so forth. But there is growing evidence that Jesus was probably planned by the Anunnaki as some sort of a prophet to start changing the minds of the people. What I find fascinating is that if you look at the Bible, the Old Testament and the New Testament, and you look at their philosophies, the two philosophies are so vastly contradictory to each other that in my opinion, they should not form the same book. They should not be part of the same book. And in the entire Old Testament, you never hear a reference to Jesus or Christ or Savior or Messiah. The first time you, or Son of God, the first time you ever hear that word or any of those words or names is in the book of Matthew, which is the first book of the New Testament. While the Old Testament talks about a God of vengeance and retribution and punishment, which very closely fits the profile of the our creator gods, the Anunnaki, who mm-hmm. wanted to control humans. Suddenly, they must have realized, hold on, maybe we're doing this the wrong way. Maybe we must send this sort of prophet that preaches peace and harmony and love between the people and a salvation on the other side of death. If you believe in us, in me, the God who created you, and it's there's a lot of evidence that was possibly the case. Now, I don't want to offend Christians by saying this, but you know, Jesus Christ was a monumental historical figure. What he preached will probably be held in very close to people's hearts for many, many years to come. But at the same time, if you look at the origins or the circumstances around his birth and how it was planned, it makes one wonder. You know that Mary, his mother, was also born of a virgin birth. Mary's father Joachim and his wife were not able to have children. And one day an angel appeared to Joachim and said, "Listen, you're going to have a daughter. Don't be alarmed. Just put her into this special school or monastery or whatever place they sent Mary to further north. And there she was prepared in this specific school that was run by a very secretive group of monks or religious group of people that I believe were aligned to the Essenes. And then at a specific age, she was brought out of there and prepared to have this new virgin birth that produced Jesus Christ.
Well done. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello. How you doing, fellas?
Good, sir. Go ahead.
I have a couple questions if I got a minute.
Yes, you do.
Scientists recently discovered through analyzing DNA that about 60,000 years ago, there was a cataclysmic event that took place and wiped out most of humanity, leaving like a dozen to maybe 300 left. They tied it in with a supervolcanic eruption in Madagascar. I was wondering if the Sumerians had written anything about that.
To my knowledge, I have not come across any of that information. I certainly do not deal with that in this particular book. But you know, there have been many many cataclysmic explosions. There's one just about an hour's drive from my house here north of Johannesburg. It's the Twying Crater that hit around, I think, 120,000 years ago. And that must have been right, you know, when the early humans were down here mining for gold. And that must have caused great havoc with the Anunnaki and their gold mining operations in southern Africa. It's a big crater. It's about just over a mile in diameter. And it's quite a spectacular sight to sit there and look at it. Yeah.
Okay, I have a more esoteric question. Let's say hypothetically that everything you're saying is absolutely factual truth, and that also reincarnation is factual truth. How would the two tie in? This is a totally hypothetical situation, but I mean...
Reincarnation is an interesting thing, because reincarnation was heavily preached by the Egyptian gods, especially the god Ra and various other gods, and they wrote he dictated the Book of the Dead, and the Egyptians had to follow certain rules, and the pharaohs, who according to the Sumerian tablets were sort of half descendants of the gods, but they wanted to have eternal life. So Marduk, which is the son of Enki, promised them that he would give them eternal life if they believed in him. And he gave them various sets of instructions and rules to abide by. And that all, can be seen very clearly in the Book of the Dead. And their afterlife, what I understand, would have been on the planet Nibiru, where you would take them from here to another planet where they could live forever, because they could manipulate the DNA and make them immortal like the Anunnaki are or were. And I see the afterlife as the religious scriptures. Remember that all the religions in the world are man-made. Okay, none of those have been written by God. They're all man-made, written by men who are fallible and need to be taken with a large pinch of salt. So you need to look at what it is that this afterlife actually promises. Reincarnation, the question needs to be asked, what is it that makes us human? Although we can create life and we can be gods unto ourselves when we clone pets or clone other humans, does it make us God? I don't think so. When we have created this life, where does the soul or the spirit of that new creature come from? That's a big question. And my theory on that is that we all are part of a much larger consciousness that fills the universe, and that we all belong to a larger spirit or a ethereal being that we are really small snippets and parts of, and once we die, our soul goes back into the greater God with a big G and becomes reunites with that. That is my personal feeling. There are many others that have various other versions of this.
Michael, assuming they genetically altered us and they held us back in intelligently for a bit with its DNA, how are we going to evolve now? I mean, we're at a point now where we're a pretty violent society, but at the same time, we're a pretty intelligent society doing the things that we've done, the space travel and everything else. Does it seem like if we were genetically altered, they did not make us as dumb as they thought they were going to, or maybe they came back and fixed us a little bit?
That's a great question, George. I believe that we have evolved beyond our maker's anticipation, and that is what was part of the problem. As we evolved as a species from some 250,000 years ago or so, and look, physically we look pretty much the same. I don't think we have really evolved on a physical level.
Right.
But and if we look at the DNA and genetic extractions from finds and so forth, skeletal finds and so forth, it looks like most of our evolution has happened on a spiritual level and a scientific level, where we have evolved mentally, philosophically, spiritually, and we're now coming to a point where we're asking these questions. I mean, if we weren't serious about this, we wouldn't be having a three-hour discussion about this, and I think the glowing population of the world is more interested in this. We are looking for the origins of our species. The answers we've been given are not good enough anymore. We want something more concrete. We need to know where we come from. I believe that if we don't know where we come from, It's impossible for us to know where we're going. It's just we're not going to solve the problems of our species. We're going to continue fighting until we know who we are and where we come from and why did we end up on this planet? How? What was the purpose for us that we ended up on this planet? Once we know that and we can agree on that, we can plot the route ahead and we can evolve. I believe that'll aid our evolution. It'll aid our growth in knowledge. It'll aid our planetary exploration, our cosmic exploration, and it'll make us a far more powerful and a united species to take on the final frontiers, as Star Trek calls it.
Wildcard Line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Lonnie from Mill Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of short questions and then a longer consideration. The first short question is the author, what he thinks is the reason why they left? And a slightly longer question, not so long, though, is where can we find the newer Sumerian documents? I've read Sitchin every book three times, and I've also gone to the library and read in some of the journals, but I'd like to know how to find the newer documents. And then the longer discussion is, my reading of Sitchin is that we were originally created purposefully to not be able to procreate. It's a little different than the way he was talking about it, that we were Lulus. They called us Lulus because the rule in the interplanetary rule is that you don't create a species that will procreate because that would interfere with the karma of the planet. You create a species that will die out, and that the later creation of our ability to procreate is a lot what the Garden of Eden is about. And so that's like a wider discussion.
Okay, want to hit on some of those, Michael, and we're probably going to run into a break, but I'll have you answer some of that when we come back too. But go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Ronnie. Thanks very much. Why they left, I suppose my guess is as good as yours. I think they grew tired of the bickering, the problematic circumstances with this Homo sapien species. They possibly had enough gold because that's originally what they came for. But it's still possible, as George and I discussed earlier, that there still might be some descendants of them left behind on Earth. That's probably a subject and a topic for another debate. To answer your question about the new Sumerian tablets or other translations of Sumerian tablets, I suppose the easiest way to get it is just do a search. You know, do the good old Google search, and you'll be amazed at how much information you find. There is the Shoyan collection in Oslo has a lot of Sumerian tablets that are absolutely amazing to look at and to read, and some of them are as new as 3 or 5 years old that have been translated. And as I said, more and more are being translated. So if you just scratch a bit, you'll probably find them.
Is the translation new or the tablets they've just found?
Both.
Ah.
The tablets are new and the translations are new, according to my reading of it.
All right. And what about holding us back from procreating?
Holding us back from procreating, Ronnie is absolutely right. Sitchin has elaborated on that greatly, and the Sumerian tablets make it very clear. And that is why when the Lulu Amelu or the primitive worker was first created, he was created not to procreate. And that is what we discussed earlier, is that even the Sumerian tablets tell us how the Anunnaki had a moral debate and the moral issue about this creation of a new species. And then there was a time when Enki and Enlil, the two brothers that was the commanders of this new planet of theirs, had various arguments, and especially when Enki went and created introduced the sex chromosome to his new creation so they could procreate by themselves. You know, that seems to have angered a lot of the Anunnaki, especially Enlil, because now he had to deal with this growing problem of humans on this planet.
Stay with us, Michael. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment to wrap things up. We'll take final phone calls. Talk with an expert on the Queen Mary. She actually has seen strange things. And then for the full body of the show, ghost hunter Joshua Warren will be our guest. So that'll be all on our next Coast to Coast program. When we come right back, we'll finish up with more of your questions for our special guest, Michael Tellinger, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Michael, anywhere in any of these writings, does it talk about Atlantis at all?
Well, Atlantis is obviously a subject matter that has been covered extensively by thousands of people, and it's possibly an interesting link between the movement of civilization from the original Sumerian Mesopotamian area through Europe and onto the island of Atlantis or the continent of Atlantis, and then into the Americas. Because what is fascinating is that, you know, while these civilizations were emerging thousands of years ago in Mesopotamia, in the Indus Valley, and in Central America, they were all evolving at a similar pace, and they all had similar knowledge and information. And the one common various common denominators that they had was they were all there because of gold. They were all digging for gold, and they all had similar creator gods that they referred to as the flying serpent or the winged serpent. And in the further east you go, the serpent becomes the sort of a shape of a dragon and a winged dragon, and that gets taken up by the Eastern mythology and Eastern religions.
Have you ever seen the tablet from Abydos in Egypt that looks like a ship, a helicopter, and a flying machine? It's incredible.
Yes, I have. It's absolutely astounding. Absolutely astounding. I was looking at some of the stuff I've got towards the end of my book that might be fascinating for your American listeners. And it's by South African preeminent mystic and Sangoma, or medicine man. He's a visionary. He's a highly respected author around the world, and I highly recommend his book Indaba, My Children, to your listeners. But he talks about some interesting things in the ancient African tradition. For example, the Hutu people, the Watusi people, state that they're not the only people in Africa who state this, but they say that their very old ancestors were a race of beings whom they called the Emanuela, which means lords who have come. And some tribes in West Africa, such as the Bambara people, also say the same thing. They say that they came from the sky many, many generations ago, a race of highly advanced and fearsome creatures which looked like men, and they called them Zishwezi. And the word for Zishwezi means dival or glidal creatures that can glide from the sky or glide through water. And then also for the Oprah Winfrey fans, you know, she just recently came to South Africa to find her Zulu ancestry, and I believe she found it. Now, everybody should be familiar with the Zulu people of Southern Africa. Mm-hmm. And the name Zulu, actually, also according to Credo Mutwa, means, its origin means people that can travel in interplanetary space between planets and in the blue sky and in the dark sky. And the Zulus claim that many thousands of years ago arrived out of the sky a race of people who married their daughters and produced a powerful race of kings and tribal chiefs. Now, you know, if that doesn't blow your mind, then nothing will.
To the phones we go. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi. This is Gabe from Walla Walla, Washington.
Hi. Gabe, go ahead, sir.
Hey, George. Hi, Michael. I just wanted to know if the Sumerian tablets talked about the devil at all.
Thanks, Gabe. The Sumerian tablets, not to my knowledge, they really talk about the ancient history. They don't delve into religion. The only time that in my research they talk about religion is when Enlil and Enki have this philosophical debate about whether they should create this new species of primitive workers, and when they discuss whether this would be okay in the eyes of the creator of all. So the devil was definitely a man-made figure, and again, it came from the conflict between Enki and Enlil after Adam has been created. Enki, as the creator, wanted the best for his creation. He wanted to inform them, enrich them, uplift them. He wanted to give them information and knowledge, and this all happened in the Garden of Eden, or Eden, as Sitchin and others put it. And Enlil was very unhappy with it. He didn't want this new creation to be intelligent and smart, and he wanted to stop their knowledge, and therefore told Adam and Eve that, you know, they're banished from the Garden of Eden and they must not have anything to do with the evil serpent. Remember that the snake and the serpent was the symbol of the creator of the human race, Enki.
Were the Anunnaki giants by any chance, Michael?
They obviously are many references to that. Anakim, meaning giants or large people, and it certainly seems from many of the translations that the Anakim or the Anunnaki were giants, and in various biblical scriptures, I don't have it right in front of me now, but it talks about men being like locusts in front of Anakim the Anakim, and so it certainly infers that the Anunnaki were larger than the species that they created.
Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hey, my name is Clarence, and I'm calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hello, Clarence. Go ahead.
And, you know, I kind of believe what your guest is talking about in the form of we never have a solution to what can create peace amongst man on the face of the earth. It's always a way to have wars and killing. And when he said religion can control a group of people, and that's true because all these religions was created by man, but yet none of them can ever come up to a solution where how do we stop man from destroying each other? No matter what pocket of the world you look at, there's always destruction among the men, and nobody can come up with the solution to stop the destruction of man, but yet everybody claims that they have these religions that's supposed to be so good, but it's still you have the destruction of man is in every religion, not just one particular religion at all.
It's a violent society, Michael.
Clarence, what I'd like to add, thank you very much for that comment. What I'd like to add to that is, you know, if there's one thing I'd like the readers to take out of my book is that, and to start understanding the difference between God with a small g and God with a big G. In my opinion, we have been conned by these ancient advanced beings that created us. We've been conned into believing that they are God, and we have actually not been praying to the correct God. We've been praying to a God with a small g and being fearful and expecting retribution and violence and that kind of stuff. But a God with a big G, in my opinion, had very little to do with our existence and our creation and our being on this planet.
Wildcard Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, this is Alan calling from Las Vegas.
Hello, Alan.
And, you know, you beat me to the question of Atlantis, and the answer was that no, it is not the same civilization as what I'm getting. So I guess I have to ask another question. Is everyone in the world, do we all come from the same alien intelligence, or do we come from different intelligence? You know, all the people, or are we from one alien intelligence? I hope you're following my question.
Well, that's an interesting question.
Alan, thanks for that question. You know, there's interesting in some of the religions. The Sumerian tablets tell us about the seven primordial goddesses that gave birth to the first few primitive workers or slave workers. And then when you look at some of the other religions, like in Indian religion, there are the seven birth goddesses, which is again a very cozy set of circumstances, a coincidence that they also have seven birth goddesses or birth mothers that are at the foundation of the Hindu and the Indian religions. So my take on this, and from the angle that this book is written from, dealing with the Sumerian tablets as the oldest known information and written document of human history, from that point it looks like we were created by a specific group of advanced beings using their DNA and the DNA of Homo erectus. So I would say yes, we would probably come from one single DNA source.
Do you think these UFO reports that we get on this planet right now, Michael, are the Anunnaki trying to revisit us?
You know, it's difficult to try and come up with an intelligent answer for that, because I've tried in my book also try to stipulate a time and a point when the Anunnaki will come around again, and you know, it's just so difficult to to put a time point to that, because we can hardly see the objects at the end of our known solar system. You know, when we get to Pluto, things get, you know, quite murky for us. So even if the planet of Nibiru was at Pluto approaching us, we probably wouldn't really know much about it for quite some time before the astronomers pick up on it and start making a noise about it. So I don't know, you know, whether they're visiting us or not. I guess if they're nearby and they've cracked the problem of traveling close to the speed of light, they most certainly would be visiting us.
I assume their breathable atmosphere on Nibiru is pretty similar to that on Earth?
Yeah, they talk about that Earth was far brighter than their planet Nibiru, and also warmer. The atmosphere was problematic, as you know. We discussed this earlier, that the ozone layer was being depleted by all kinds of activities on their planet. But theirs was what they refer to in the tablets as a radiant planet. It had a very thick atmospheric cushion that protected it from the various rays, the cosmic rays, but also at the same time prevented heat loss and heat gain. Their atmosphere, I take it, must have the climate must have been a bit warmer than here. Sorry, a bit cooler than here, because it talks about the Enlil especially not liking the heat on Earth and moved into the higher, cooler areas of Mesopotamia.
You would think he would bring air conditioning with him.
You would absolutely with all their technology.
Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast to Coast around the year. Hi there.
Yes. Good morning, George.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning to you and your guests.
Thank you.
Two quick questions. What do you believe the Anunnakis needed the guys down there in the Abzu for? You know, because you said it was there to mine gold. Now, what did they need the gold for?
The gold was sprinkled in their atmosphere, and you stop me if I'm wrong, Michael. The gold was sprinkled in the atmosphere because they need it. I guess they were losing their shield, basically. Is that true, Michael?
No, you hit it on the spot. Obviously, you know a lot about that. That's what the tablets tell us. Again, you know, they found that gold had the right ingredients and characteristics to use as a material to regenerate their depleting ozone layer. And they found that when they ground it to a very fine powder, and they shot it into the atmosphere and spread it, and throughout the atmosphere, it created a protective shield to protect them from the dangerous cosmic rays. But you know, it's interesting because, you know, we look at this and think, oh, it's a bunch of hogwash, you know. But I mean, look at us. Ozone depletion is a huge ecological and environmental subject.
Sure.
on a day-to-day basis. And what are we going to do when we suddenly reach a point of no return and we realize that we've actually properly messed up our own ozone layer here? Are we going to reach for the Sumerian tablet and say, wow, listen, these guys did it with gold. Maybe we should do it with gold as well.
Right. Now, are you also on the understanding that the reason why the Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden because they wasn't given... Oh, they wasn't supposed to have been procreating, but the ones down in the Abzu, they were needed to procreate to do this constant mining?
From my understanding, it was Adam and Eve were put into the Garden of Eden really to be observed, to watch their behavioral patterns, to see how they get on, to see if they could procreate, and to see if they could get on. It wasn't about procreation. In fact, I think they wanted to have them procreate because they've gone beyond the procreation period already. But what happened is that their maker, or the entwined serpent, or Enki, that later became known as the devil, he wanted to give them information and knowledge about who they were, why they were on this planet, and what they were doing, so they could actually feel a sense of worth and sense of being. While Enlil, his brother, didn't want to have anything to do with this. He wanted to keep them ignorant. He wanted to keep them enslaved, and to a large extent succeeded, because after this, you know, they kicked them out of the Garden of Eden. They were told never to deal with the evil serpent, and from that point onwards, we start seeing the emergence of all the different global religions that are still keeping humans enslaved in fear.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. So you don't believe now that they were free from all of the toil and labor, and that they were like pretty much like basically the prototype, and yeah, they were free. Excuse me. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Like an experiment, exactly. Weren't they?
They were an experiment. I mean, they were the prototype. You're quite right. That's how I see it. Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden were a prototype, and they were there to be observed so they could study them and see how they could possibly improve on them, or if they had any malfunctions or defects, I suppose, you know. I mean, what do we do with a new species? If we create a new species, we're busy doing that right now. You know, we're trying to reintroduce species that have been extinct for millions of years on this planet, and what are we going to do with them? When we do finally get this right and do it, we're going to keep them in an observation place and look at them to see how they adapt to their new environment. You know, we'll do exactly the same as the god of this new species.
Do they genetically alter us and grow us at real time, Michael, or did they somehow have a way to speed things up?
The tablets talk about that the Anunnaki females had a much longer gestation period than with their own offspring than when they were giving birth to the new humans, to the new species. So I don't think they speeded it up, not from my understanding of it and my research. But somehow the genetics got involved and the new blend of genetics speeded up the process.
Would it surprise you if this planet Nibiru came racing through our solar system at any time?
Not at all. No, I mean, as I said earlier, I wish that would happen. I would love to see that happen. You know, we've seen comets come and go. Now let's see a real planet come and go and give us something to really talk about and start reevaluating our place on this planet and who we are and where we come from.
Slave Species of God. Michael, where do you get the book?
My book is available, should be available in most bookstores in the United States, obviously on Amazon. Amazon.com, and if you're in the UK, it's also on Amazon.co.uk. The distributors are APG. If you go to apgbooks.com, you can go straight there. I think they have a special on the book. And if you have any problems, just get onto my website, and I'll help you out.
I bet you had fun writing it and doing the research, huh?
I tell you, it was a journey of discovery. You know, when you start something like this, you have no idea the journey that you will be taken on.
and it's a journey that will never end, Michael.
It is fabulous. I must say, it has changed my life. It has introduced me to people like yourself and others who are absolutely wonderful, who are passionate about this subject. And I believe that the 1.2 billion people on planet Earth that are without any religious convictions are a growing number of people that are looking for new answers and are hopefully going to help us find them.
Very good. Thank you, Michael. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.